This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hi, AfterBuzzers. You're watching the AfterBuzz TV show for House of Cards, Season 4, Chapters 43 and 44. Join us as we break down the episodes, give our thoughts and predictions. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Back by popular demand, we are here. We're doing chapters 43 and 44, a double up for you guys as we go forward in the season. My name is Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shaka Strong.
Michael Klaus, you can follow me on Instagram at TheOnlyMC, on Twitter at Michael Klaus TV. My snap's also on there if you want to follow that. I know people are really getting into that. You're a big snapper.
I am a big snapper. Hey guys, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Maria Cavasudo and on Snapchat at MGCVSST.
And I'm Kevin Ellis. You can find me on Twitter at TheKevinEllis or on Instagram at KevinEllis25.
Yes, yes. Well, wow, what an amazing two episodes. Weren't we all excited that we actually got to watch two episodes?
You
too,
watched
right?
It first.
It felt good.
You watched it first and you tweeted us and said, wow, or something like that.
Yeah,
just,
you did.
As if there wasn't enough build up to already watch, you know, this episode.
Yeah. Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I loved it because just when I felt comfortable with House of Cards, they really, you know, as we get later on, they flip the table over, you know?
Do you ever feel comfortable with House of Cards? I'm always waiting for some random crap to happen.
Well, I was wondering how much longer can they go. I was getting used to the season. It felt like, you know, how many more future seasons would there be? But now I know the writers are just exceptional and they can really just turn it on a dime.
Yeah.
So I guess let's just start from the top, you know. Frank actually is exploring Claire as a vice presidential candidate.
I think he's probably more exploring to shoot her down. And you see that he mentions the numbers of the less than 20% are for, you know, the vice president and the president being related. Less than 10% are for with no one with political experience. Mind you, we're in a season right now where Trump is leading all candidates, zero political experience. I found that interesting. But I think he's looking at the numbers to try to shoot her down and find reasons why she shouldn't run.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Well, he's got that line to Seth where he says, don't dissuade me, figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So was that him really saying, I do want her as VP?
I think it's more he knows that she's not going to let this up. And he has to explore all possibilities because there's no way around not putting her on the ticket because he knows what she's capable of more than anybody else in this world. So I don't think that it's really accepting of it. I think he just needs to make a play. Otherwise, there's no going back and there's no alternative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see how it goes going forward. But I personally would like to think Frank was sort of starting to reconcile himself with the fact that maybe he does need to share, you know, in this vision they had.
You've always been the big Frank supporter. You've always been the one who's been on the Frank train.
I like Frank.
Yeah. It's all right. It's okay.
No, that's, again, giving him way too much niceness. Totally. I think he's ready to shoot her down. But I think he's entertaining the idea because he can't flat out be like, no, no, thank you, because he knows that, like, when that happens, she does come back with fire in a way. Mm-hmm. So he had to figure out a different way to maybe make it work.
Yeah. And I'll skip a little bit. We see a little bit of his reaction when Leanne gives him, you know, Claire's reaction to the numbers and the poll numbers that she got. What did you guys make of that?
Was that the ultimatum? Is that where you're going with that? Yeah. Wow.
Big scene. I mean, we can see that the wheels start turning. Yeah. You can tell that he is immediately trying to figure out a backup plan. And I don't... there's a lot that I have to say about the scene because it gets very interesting at the very end because it's very short.
Yeah.
But when he brings on in Stamper and he brings on in Meacham, I have to believe that there was a plan devised. I don't know how you guys feel, if you guys think that there's more of a conspiracy theory before we get to what happens.
Yeah.
But if we can get into it, I will. but go for it. If you want more to say on this.
No.
Go for it.
Well, okay. So it was very exciting because I you look at the two people that he brought in. It's Meacham and Stamper, the two people who literally view Frank as their savior in all respects. Mm-hmm. That he saved both of their lives. Stamper from alcoholism and Meacham from losing his job and making his life more consequential. These are people that in many respects are willing to give their lives for him in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
My thinking is that he devised a plan, and yes, it was 2 hours, and this is where it gets a little iffy, is what he knew beforehand, because if we go back just a little bit earlier in the episode, Seth goes on into the bar to talk with the chief of staff of Dunbar's political campaign, and he's told that the attorney general had a conversation with Dunbar about the fact that Lucas actually went on up to Dunbar. So he knows that Dunbar is implicated with Lucas Goodwin, but Seth is also aware of Lucas Goodwin. And for someone in the administration to know about Lucas, and for Seth to need some kind of bargaining chip to get himself on a level where Frank can trust him again, because he's not trusting him.
Yeah.
I think a conversation happened the night before where Seth might have told Frank about Lucas. And I don't know what happens in this.
No,
in this.
No.
I think that this was all planned.
No way.
He brought him in. Okay, guys, you have to admit that it was really peculiar that he said, close the door, and it's just Meacham and Stamper. And then right before he gets shot, he asks Stamper, is everything secure? And why did he actually secure Claire in her home down in Dallas before it even happened?
Because if you recall, Claire's ultimatum to him was that she's going to announce the divorce on Super Tuesday.
But that's way in advance.
And Leanne's going down there to give to go meet with her. I think they wanted to avoid any.
But Leanne's at the hotel though. She's not going anywhere.
Well, his immediate reaction was stop her, right?
Mm-hmm. I think they just wanted a little more control on Claire in that. I mean, I see where you're going. And listening to it, I mean,
I'm just saying.
But I think it's just.
Yeah, Glenn here is making fun of me saying it. You think Frank got himself shot? I don't know. Anything is possible in this series if we've learned that.
I think Frank is too calculating to leave an X factor like that.
And seeing how serious.
Yeah.
And everything that, you know, Lucas leaves behind that we find more, I just.
Frank's not risking Meacham, and you know he's not going to risk anyone else getting injured.
Yeah.
And speaking of Meacham, you know his fate. But we do have that very, I guess, poignant but bizarre scene where they're looking at the painting.
Yes.
And of course, I'm trying to break down the symbolism and all this. I'm still like racking my brain. Well,
you know what I thought when they're doing the painting and with the hand and whatnot? I was like, okay, like maybe there's something that's going to be building here, you know? Because Claire's kind of like doing it, kind of her own thing, but not really on her own. Yeah. So I kind of saw something budding right there. But then,
I was the same. I thought my prediction was right. I predicted the love triangle, and I was thinking, okay, my prediction's coming true. This is bizarre little hand thing.
Yeah. But
do you guys find any symbolism in that, you know, that rebel flag that was going down? And then we have kind of a couple of scenes later when his ancestor is, you know, he's hallucinating about his ancestor.
Yeah. I mean, it's the obviously the rebel flag kind of sinking into oblivion. You could easily just interpret that as Frank being the rebel that he is, to an extent. I mean, sinking into oblivion, that's an easy connection. But I'm very...
One that I didn't make, but it's easy enough.
Well, I look at anything sinking into oblivion, and you see the rise and the ebb and the flow with so many politicians, and especially Frank in this entire season. But I'm really interested, to a little bit of a tangent, where you see the hand, that is obviously going to play a role in future episodes where Frank's going to come back and he's going to see that.
Yeah.
Because it's on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My initial thought, actually, when I saw the drawing, the hand reminded me of, like, Thanksgiving.
The turkey.
Yeah, those turkeys that you make. Yeah.
And I was like, ah, okay. I get that out of my head. That's clearly not what we're working with.
But you know what you're saying is like, okay, well, if he goes back and sees it, it's going to bring back memories, obviously, of like Meacham and whatnot. But mm-hmm. then this whole, you know, sometimes there's like the whole revenge thing and wanting to exact revenge on whoever, you know, took him out. There's not going to be that entity. So like, what will that be instead? Like, what will come from this maybe remembrance when he sees the hand? That'd be an interesting.
But I do think you're right about that symbolism, because now that I think about it, they mentioned seeing lightning, whether there was lightning mm-hmm. in that painting, and obviously the flash of a gun, and then mm-hmm. the rebel flag going down.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, looking at that and just the whole other scenes, that's something that they've never done in any other season, is just bring thoughts and beliefs to life.
Yeah.
And I love it, because it gives you always know what they're thinking, and maybe they can say what they're thinking, but this makes you feel what they're thinking. You feel it. You to have that emotion of, wow, you know, oh, I wanted to fight her. No, like, you wanted to fight her and slam her up against the glass. And his thoughts of, you know, with a Confederate soldier and, that kind of taking him down. And he feels like he's there.
I like how they're doing that. It's very much like bringing the, like, subconscious, or mm-hmm. maybe not even that subconscious, but subconscious into, like, reality for us. So it's very pleasing to watch that. Even though it's horrible what's going on, but I mean, it's pleasing to just be able to see that.
To engage in it.
Yes.
So now we have what really is the bang of 43, and, you know, Frank goes to the college and he says, well, he wants to meet with the protesters. He wants to hear them out, because that's what great men do. What did you guys think about that speech right before he goes out to meet the protesters?
You know, I mean, he had a lot to come back from, because there was a serious issues, and I mean, he clearly lost some support, especially among, like, you know, young people, and that's why the college makes mm-hmm. perfect sense. That's why so many presidential candidates are doing college runs right now as well, to appeal to those, like, you know, young people. But you know what I realized? When he's, like, out there trying to talk to these people, nobody's giving him he's asking people, like, what should I do? Like, what would you do if you were in my place? And they're not giving him concrete answers.
Yeah.
So it actually made me, like, support Frank even more, because nobody else has any idea how to fix any of this, and he's actually in the hot seat. Yeah. So it kind of, like, gave me a little bit of, like, okay, some sort of good feelings towards Frank, if there are any possible.
Yeah, it's never easy. You look at the things that he's dealing with Russia, and, you know, obviously a little bit with China, you would think, and then the oil crisis and everything else, and there is no simple answer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way that's like, oh, well, actually what I could do is just flip the switch, but I'm not going to do that because it's too easy. No, it's not there.
No. And it's like, they're like, oh, resign or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's not really telling me, like, what you would do, mm-hmm. actually, physically do, not just resign. That's the easy way out, right?
I think that kind of highlighted probably most presidents' frustration, that there is no, they are just one person that's part of a system of government. But I don't know how we missed this assassination attempt, because the one thing we talked about last week was how desperate Lucas was. We all said, this guy, he's got nothing to lose.
You know what, though? As how desperate as we've felt him, I thought definitely he was more towards suicide than an actual, like, against someone else. Which then we realized, like, later on, that there was a suicide note or whatever. Yeah. But I didn't really see him acting out. I saw him just acting on himself.
Yeah.
I mean, the journalist in him definitely wanted to get a story out. And you would think that he would have a little bit more patience. But I think that he viewed Dunbar as his absolute last opportunity to get this this story heard. Mm-hmm. And once he felt that this was no longer going to happen, I think it was his nuclear option, if you will.
Well, this story is almost like his legacy as a journalist, if you would, I guess. Yeah. No, I agree definitely. With that. Yeah, that's a great point.
And this whole, you know, assassination attempt really sets Dunbar up, given the fact that he had given her a call and she called the Attorney General, which he wasn't supposed to do. And of course, she knew a former solicitor, she shouldn't have done it. What did you guys think about that whole setup and what it means for Dunbar's campaign?
I look at that as very much a political eyesore, not necessarily that it should be an eyesore. Because if you look at what it actually is, Dunbar has nothing to do with this. Mm-hmm. She turned him away. She said no. But once again, the headline reads, Dunbar connected with Lucas Goodwin.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, right well, there.
It was illegal for her to even be in contact with him, because he was in witness protection. Yeah. And then it was illegal for her to be contacting the Attorney General. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
So she's violating, like, actual laws. So do you think this is going to sink her campaign completely?
Oh, she's done. She's done completely.
Oh, yeah.
I think she was done way before even this. Like, let's be real.
Realistically, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But in general terms, I mean, yes, this was a moment in time where they had to manipulate the situation to ensure that he is the nominee and to look forward to the general election.
I find it interesting, and they're talking about this throughout the two episodes, is that they're talking about, oh, Frank is ahead in 6 of the next 7 or 7 of the next 8 polls. Yeah. When the behind the scenes are saying, we don't even know if he's going to live. He needs his liver.
Yeah.
It's like, but people would love to vote for him because getting shot is great for a presidency.
Yeah, of course, of course.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah. It does.
But getting shot is great for a presidency.
The thing is, if you look at it, even like Claire doing her whole little act, you know, tearing up on TV, everything, it's just such. It's almost like the equivalent of like clickbait, but for like polls. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We all want to be like part of that. We all want to have that sympathy.
Yep. Well,
it's horrible, but you are.
Tragedy
Michael's
is
right.
Great. Tragedy. It sounds terrible. What 9/11 did for Bush to an extent, it brings everyone together and they see this tragedy and they, you know, they feel.
Yeah, this sort of idea of the American spirit rallying behind, you know, your leader. But what you just said about Claire and the kind of fake crying, but did we have a moment? And of course, you know, Claire's mom and Ellen Burstyn just really hits her hard. Did we have a moment where, at least for me, it seemed like Claire really was sad about Frank? And I saw love there. And what did the mom say? Do you want me to console you? Yeah, I hope he dies.
I hope he dies.
What did you guys think about that scene?
I mean, that doesn't surprise me coming from her mother. Yeah. It makes complete sense. I still want to further understand why she hates him so bad. I understand that they weren't from the same like social class or anything like that. It, you know, clear problems, I guess, but I would want to understand even more.
This long into the marriage.
Yeah, it's like still all that hate. You would think that somebody would get past that. But I think that there is like, it's not really like love, but it's more of like, we've been together for so long. What would I actually do without this person if they were physically gone? Not just divorced, but like physically gone. Yeah. So I think that's what she's feeling. I don't necessarily think she's feeling love. And I think like on camera, like everyone's like, oh, she's good, isn't she? I was like, are you kidding? That's the fakest thing I've ever seen in my life. Oh, but it's supposed to play out that way, I think.
And she's loving the power that she's now attained.
Don't even get me started. She has more power than the vice president. She's like literally his like wingman.
Who is
now
the president?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's just whatever.
I don't know. But for me, there was a moment where I thought she looked like she wanted someone to hold her. She wanted to be consoled in that moment, and she knew she wasn't going to get it from her mom, so she stayed stoic. And she certainly didn't get it from her.
Could this be that point that I talked about like 2 weeks ago with my prediction that she gets to that point? She has that little moment of emotion where seeing there's so much happening and so much that is on her that she has that little bit of emotion. Could it have been? I'm going to say my prediction came true, you agree with me or not.
I think she's emotional. I think I saw love for Frank in that scene. I think that's what I saw. I saw a genuine love. And, well, now everything's in chaos, and we get Blythe, who comes off as, like, the blundering idiot, right? And so he's faced with a lot of difficult decisions. How do you think he handled it with, especially Blythe and Doug? Because they were kind of butt-heads pretty immediately.
Oh, I mean, it's fun. Stamper is just in one of those awkward positions where he's somebody who has fed off of the power of his boss, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's earned that, but now he's in a situation where he has no power, and his voice is not heard one bit, and he's just not used to it. It makes him uncomfortable, and you see it when he's, you know, almost pleading on Frank's, I don't want to say deathbed because I feel like he's going to live, but it's just the fact that, you know, he just doesn't know what to do, and he looks to this guy for guidance. I mean, in so many respects, he is his father figure, his brother, just everything combined in one. I mean, his whole life is Frank Underwood, and if anything does happen to him, I mean, like, let's say in the weird instance that he can't get a liver, he would put a gun to his head, shoot himself, and make them take his liver.
The full one, not just the half that he can live with.
And exactly.
That's what I thought about these two episodes. These were really about the devotion of Doug. This guy is devoted to Frank. He's offering his own liver for the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was season three. It was going back to season three, seeing the devotion of Doug Stamper.
Yeah.
And then we saw Meacham again towards the beginning of the season. Just this devotion of these two individuals. Without them, you know, Frank is almost nothing.
Yeah.
You know what about Blythe, though? I think the only way that he can manage his like nerves is to be assertive, and he's found the perfect vehicle to be assertive and like really, really strong with Claire.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect vehicle for her to start proving her worth, and then at some point it's all gonna come full circle. She's gonna end up being like the VP or even more, just saying.
Yes.
Because she's going to, I just find it so funny. I agree with you guys, the loyalty, because I think the one thing that Doug doesn't want more than anything, is to see all the hard work that Frank has put into the campaign all of a sudden be torn down because of strange decisions by this newcomer.
Yeah.
Quote unquote newcomer, you know.
But I think that's so important. Blythe and Claire, that dynamic, and it changes a little bit. And I don't know if you guys caught on to...
It's almost like flirtatious. It's weird.
And I got the feeling when I saw their relationship, I was wondering, I wonder if this is how it was with her and Frank in the beginning, where he was sort of just unstable, and then she gave him the calm and was really to settle him down. How did you guys feel about how, throughout several times in the episode, that she really is... his foil and his, you know, calming influence.
Well, it's setting it up so where when Frank does say that Claire is going to be his running mate, Donald's all for it. He knows that he is not capable of attaining the position of the presidency, or maintaining it, I should say. And he will be all for making Claire the VP. I mean, he will actually go out on tour, if you will, and promote her as the vice president.
Wait, so you don't think... Blythe is not going to want to maintain that power.
No.
No.
No. I don't think he wants it. I think that he actually
so
is
out of his
shivering.
League.
Yeah, I mean, you see it when he's talking to Petrov. He's like,
his conversation
his pants.
With Petrov was hilarious.
And that was one of my favorite scenes. But I thought at the end of that scene, I saw Blythe get a little bit of swag. Because he told him, who's running who? I'm the president, Doug.
Yeah.
You sit down.
Yeah, but that's not. It's not real. That is all Claire.
And I think he feels emboldened by that. I think with Claire in his corner, I think he feels like a president.
Yeah.
Oh, with Claire, yeah.
No, you go. You go. I don't know what
I'm saying.
Frank's not going to die. He's going to remain president.
But when you say with Claire, what does she say in the kitchen to him? Or, you know, they're having a cigarette. To me, she's flirting with him, and she's angling for something more.
Well, no, she's flirting with him to use him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's going to use him to do whatever she wants.
Shaka, keeping the alley open to be his
women
first
do that
lady.
A lot. They flirt with men to get what they want. Or, it happens.
But some go further and marry
that
guy.
It's true.
Some go further. No, but some go further and marry the guy. Do you think she's maybe angling to be, you know, his first lady at some point?
Oh, no. I don't think so.
She talks about, obviously, she talks about not having any feelings whatsoever for Frank. So she lets him kind of know subtly about that.
Oh, that surprised me. I'm like,
came out.
And I don't believe it.
Yeah,
did you believe it when she said that?
I think like Frank, she is a master manipulator, and she's going to do whatever she can to kind of pull the strings in this scenario. And I think, again, flirtation, she's using this to her advantage.
I think she, you look at one of the reasons that she was initially attracted to Frank was his power and his quest for power. And certainly that's not necessarily something that Blythe has. So I think she would be miserable with a person like him.
I think she's got more of a chance at hooking up with Petrov than she does Donald Blythe.
I don't know.
Just say.
I just found it very telling when she did that little thing about the cigarette. She throws it in the water and she says, Marjorie wouldn't like that. And she was almost putting herself in the position of his former wife. Just doing the same things that his former wife did for him. Puts him in that mindset. Oh, you care for me like she cared for me.
Yeah.
Does anyone else see this? Reach out. Is anyone else?
Gladiator mentioned in the chat room that I didn't see flirting, but Claire is naturally seductive.
That goes in keeping with what you said, Kevin. It's like she's a manipulator. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, yes, there's some flirtation. I did see some truth to her telling Blythe that she has no feelings or she doesn't love her husband anymore. But I think that's all within her plan, kind of to reel him in, to open up this trust and to show some vulnerability so that she can keep, like, using him and manipulating him and just kind of using him as a puppet.
Agreed.
We shall see how it turns out.
Yes, we will.
We have these images. You know, chapter 44 begins again with this Confederate soldier. I believe it's Augustus Underwood. You know, Frank talked about him as his ancestor that was on the Confederate side. What do we think these visions are for? We've seen a couple of different visions of this guy with the musket in the room.
I think it's just this inner battle inside of him. I'm trying to recall it was the beginning of season 3 that we actually visited the Civil War reenactment site. And what was his relationship with his great-grandfather? I mean, he was on the Union side. He was on the Confederate side. Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to this.
I think it's too soon to tell. I think it's kind of there because he's obviously sedated and hurt, and his mind's probably just all over the place, but I don't see a clear thing yet. Although when he shaves his face, I'm like, that kind of maybe pricked me up. But then I see Doug Stamper, like, you know, sitting there, so I'm still a little confused about
that. Obviously, the Confederates were not successful in that battle. Is that the Is that the draw? Is that the symbolism? Is that he's locked in a battle, yeah. And obviously the Confederates did not win. Does he see himself like a Confederate losing the battle?
Look, I don't even know if that's true, but I like the way it sounds, because that just
you
sounds...
You guys, I will see you next week.
I will say the last vision that he did have was when he was in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, he did have his great-grandfather behind him, and he was just kind of wandering in the wilderness alone because he's fighting this battle. You know, he's fighting for his life. And I think when it comes down to it is, you know, he's walking into this abyss and he's being, you know, shot at from all angles. He's got no protection. He's just completely vulnerable. He has no power whatsoever.
Yeah.
He has no power.
Yeah.
And he's the president of the United States. He's got his life in the hands of doctors who can't even get him a liver because he's on a priority
list.
He's
number 3 as the president.
I didn't know that could ever possibly happen. I would just think he gets the first liver that's up.
You know? Yeah, I would like to know who has those first and second spots.
Yeah, you know.
That's pretty crazy. But it says something. I mean, it says something about our democracy in that we hold every citizen at the highest regard, even if he is the president of the United States. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting because he is at his most vulnerable, but actually in this moment, he's actually getting stronger with the poll numbers. And now we get the note that Lucas has left, but Claire handles it brilliantly. What did you think of that and how she...
I kind of got a little upset, but it's not surprising because I think it's like, oh yeah, just this mental illness and he's just not doing well. And if only he had gotten help. And I was just like, you know, shame on you. That is an awful, But you, what else do you do?
Yeah,
what else do you do as First Lady to try and cover that up? Because you know, if you're unable to clean that up, just like Doug said, you got to figure out a way to make it work and spin it your way. And I think that's the only possible way that I could have thought of.
I think that is going to be a big storyline. And obviously you see it in these couple episodes. You hear it mainly. And I enjoyed that where they were cutting to various points.
Yeah.
And I think even talking, they had one in Dunbar's campaign headquarters. And you hear the TV in the background saying, oh, and we know that he is this person who worked for this outlet.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think is going to carry through a lot. And you're going to find more out and it's going to get more out. And looking at what Claire said, I would say that her comments... And I have a journalist background. I was a television reporter for over 4 years. And
I'm studying journalism right now, so hey.
See? We have the journalism, you know, in us. And I think what her comments said will scare away probably 98% of journalists.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, you know, we don't want to focus on
it.
The issue is that you have Kate Baldwin,
exactly,
who is one of the remaining 2% and other ones that will continue to dig and to go to people like Tom Hammerschmidt and others.
Yep.
And one of the questions that I have, and I think will be interesting to see how it turns out, is they'll do this digging. But in order to actually reveal something, they'll need a lot of information, and that takes time. So when, in the course of this series, will they have enough information to come together with a full story? And at that point, later in the election cycle, how will that affect poll numbers as you get closer to a general election or a certain primary election?
Well, I mean, it's also Dunbar is clearly, I mean, she had that conversation with him, so, like, how's that going to work for her?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think her campaign's going to be done, but
yeah.
I think I've told what I was going to say.
I think it'll take time. I think it'll take a lot more time, and that it might get to a point where it's way past the general election even, and it might become a grounds for impeachment for all we know, which is pretty...
Then again, we do have another female running right now for president who possibly could be indicted, and she's still going forward. So you never know what could happen in this political cycle.
What I was going to say was I think Baldwin's done. I think Baldwin and Hammerschmidt, I think Hammerschmidt effectively... kind of iced Baldwin on the idea that anything untoward actually took place.
He goes back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's acting strangely.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that little newspaper they left of Lucas's stuff being discounted is going to bother him. And he's going to start to kind of dig a little bit more privately on his own. And he'll have the freedom to do so because the FBI has kind of stopped looking at him. What do you guys think about that?
I want to know if all of the information was kept in his little file folder.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see if the FBI actually did end up taking any bit of information.
Well, I think they said they didn't.
They said when
they dropped it off, he said, you didn't find anything useful. And they're like, no, there was nothing in here.
I mean, they said that. But, you know, if he actually goes in the file folder, finds that stuff is missing, you know, we'll see. Because he didn't really.
I wonder if they were, like, bugging that file folder. Because the way they gave it back to him was unusual, too. Just kind of like, oh, here it is. Here's your stuff back.
I just have a bad feeling about the dog going forward, if there's any kind of blackmail. Just throwing it out there just on the off chance that something happens.
I will say it's interesting when Tom and Kate are talking and Kate says, oh, you know, we'd love to have you at the Telegraph. And he says, quote, "Let me know when the leader gets fired." And saying that he's almost opening up the opportunity to come back. Obviously, he did kind of get dismissed and fired. But I think, you know, in him opening that back up, he's still a journalist. Journalists at heart want to find the truth, want to find the answer.
Not only that, though, he has a personal kind of relationship with this actual story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's not going to – he's not going to let that go. That's not the last we've seen of him.
Yeah.
And speaking of comebacks, not the last we've seen of him, Remy's back in the game.
Remy. I love Remy. Danton's back. He is, and also
blackmailed back in the game.
Yeah. Right? What?
I did predict that he was going to end up working for Claire, so I would like to say that I was right on that front. But it's like when, it's a weird way.
And no one knows. Yeah, I think that no one knows. Yeah.
When Leanne comes up to him with this thing and like then offers kind of the other side of what would happen, it's just like, what is wrong with you people? Can't you just, like, leave me alone? Let me enjoy my parents and, like, you know, putting some very high-priced gasoline into my car. Like,
very high-priced.
But, you know, man, I'm sorry. It makes me mad. Because these people, it's really not fair, okay?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole theme of just trying to get every bit of information blackmail. Seth to Stamper to now Jackie Sharp
and Raymond Tusk.
Yeah, there were so many people.
Of course he's going
to
be back.
Yeah. There were so many people in episode 5 that I had to like, all right, pause it, go back. Who are you? How are you connected again?
Same thing. Kate is the reporter's name. Yeah. Right? I just want to make sure. I remember her as Kim Davis. But Kate, that's her actual name. Or Kim Davies or something like that. She's in Fear the Walking Dead. Anyway, she comes back, but it's like 5 episodes or like a couple episodes in, and I'm like, whoa, where was she? You know, she's been just chilling this whole time.
And I like that that we saw Doug, you know, he made the AG resign, he made Seth resign, but now Seth wants back in. So he's using this information.
To what do we think about the escalation of Seth? I mean, getting caught and then kind of going back in and then almost getting killed by Doug.
What a bizarre scene. Yeah, what do you guys think about that scene and, you know, Seth getting back in the...
I loved it.
Seth is an opportunist.
Yes, but also Doug is scary.
Oh, yeah.
If someone, I would be like, I am out of here. Like, get off my face. Like, I'm done here. But you know what? They must just both want very badly what the other, like, you know, their working relationship and what that means for them and the profits from that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in it. You know what I mean? You're not going to put up with that kind of stuff. I mean, as Seth and then as Doug, I mean, it's easier to, like, you know, sleep with the enemy, I guess.
There's something, too, to say that they really want to stay in the position of where they are. Because working in government as a press secretary, you're not making that much money. Jay Carney, one of the, you know, renowned ones for President Obama, made $175,000 a year. When he left, when he left, I believe he signed a multi-million-dollar deal, and I know a year ago he signed on to do public relations with Amazon, in which I can guarantee you he's making more than $175,000 a year.
Yeah.
So for Seth, you know, he must really just want to stay in and be connected to that power, because at a certain point you could make a lot more in the private sector and that would be a way for him to get out, but he doesn't.
It's better to be involved and present and like recognized than I feel like totally forgotten. It's like, where do you go from that? Yeah, you resigned, but it's just like, where do you go from that? That's part of the... Yeah, that's all.
He's very ambitious. You buy a vacation home and you live.
You go to the private sector and you make a lot of money.
That is exactly what we would do. Yeah. But like, looking even at Seth's face, it's like, that's not the goal. The goal is maybe to even
He's always wanted to be more. I mean, he was gunning for the chief of staff position right before Stamper actually regained the trust of Frank. So he's definitely an ambitious individual and he's going to do whatever he can to get ahead. Their fight was insane. I mean, I actually thought Stamper might kill him.
Oh, I thought so, too.
Something was going to happen, I don't know how you recover from murdering this guy. I'm sure they'll find a way.
Yeah.
I think we also had a great relationship, or, you know, just watching it unfold with Claire and Doug. And right now, they're kind of on the same page, but I can see the seams getting ripped apart. But one thing I've noticed, she always she treats him like a child. Douglas.
Douglas.
Douglas. It's Douglas. Always, and it's always kind of somewhat condescending, even when she's helping him to go see Frank, which I think she recognized that he's so loyal and has this need.
But doesn't she also call Frank Francis? She doesn't call him Frank very often or at all, I think.
Yeah, but I think he enjoys Francis.
Yeah, there's a condescension to me. When
definitely
I,
in that.
When you hear Douglas, there's like a condescension.
It's almost like she's talking to a child.
And okay. Doug let down his guard right away. When Frank got hurt, he let down his guard going to Claire.
Yeah.
And I think now he certainly regrets that because he senses that he's losing control.
Yeah.
He senses that Claire is 100% in charge. He has Blythe. He has Remy. She has Blythe. She has Remy. You know, she has Tusk. Mm-hmm. And the fact of that scene where, you know, he comes in and says to Blythe, I need to know what is going on.
Yeah.
You know, you need to tell me. What do you mean you're bringing in Tusk? What are you having this meeting? What is that? And he kind of shuts him down in a little bit of a power struggle. And he senses that he's losing control.
She does bring up the fact that she's willing to actually speak with him at the White House.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means quite yet, but she did say that she doesn't want to keep him out of the dark. Join me at the White House. But he refuses. He said that he'd actually stay with Frank.
Yeah. Will she try to turn him from Frank just the way Frank has tried to turn Leanne and other people away from Claire?
I think Claire is too savvy for that. I think she knows how loyal he is to Frank.
I do too. I think that there's nothing that would actually prevent Stamper from...
That's why she made such a point to make sure he could go see him. Because she's not going to fight that. In that way, she wants to be on his side to give him that bone. But she knows that he's way too loyal to Frank.
But it's also a great way for her to assert her power even more because it takes the First Lady to give the order to be able to see Frank. Mm-hmm. And Doug can't do that on his own.
Yeah.
Well, technically it's the Vice President, but she's wielding her power.
But well, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, he could have gone to the Vice President, but it's almost like not pleading to her directly, but kind of, and she like gives that to him. It's almost like mercy to the poor, you know? Like.
Yeah, and the Vice President and Doug don't have a great relationship, or the acting president, you know?
Yeah, so... Mm-hmm. Great way for her to just put herself in between everybody and just, you know, wiggle the puppet strings.
So before we get into predictions, what was your favorite? I just want to know what was, like, your big scene for these two episodes. What was it that you guys loved the most about them?
The biggest takeaway that I have from this is just the legacy of Lucas. In that him leaving all the notes behind, leaving the entire story, which I will say, as a journalist, I was surprised that he didn't send it to the press.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he could see, if I'm not successful with this assassination or shooting, possible, you know, attempted assassination, then he's kind of screwed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
However, you know, that's huge because it's in the public record, it's all there, and it's very detailed. I mean, going from Zoe... going, you know, mentioning Doug, mentioning, you know, so many tidbits of information in that.
I don't know if it was I don't know if it's detailed. It was pretty short in
I thought it was like two or three pages handwritten.
It was a couple pages, pictures. Yeah.
I thought it was just one page that was just scrolled down.
It looked like one page. But
I think it's just one page.
But it has like several photos on it. It has the other guy who they, you know, killed off when.
And indicts Doug a little bit because it mentions Rachel Posner.
Yeah, it does.
And it was another person who died. And it's like, oh, this is a huge conspiracy and news headlines.
Though you could see how quickly you could get rid of it in terms of it was so much information that was so detailed and ridiculous to process at once. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the rantings of a madman.
Mm-hmm. Get rid of the 98%.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's why it's easy for her to twist that and use that, the madman kind of idea.
Agreed, because I think that there's, I think you were right, Mike, in that you were getting to, it could have been more of like a Shawshank Redemption type thing where you guys have all seen the movie, right?
Yes.
Where he actually sends on in all the information.
What movie
the
is that? I've never seen.
I know, right? It's really good. Got
terrible reviews.
It's awful. It might be. It might not be in the top 10 of IMDb. Anyway, so where was I going with that? I'm getting to the point to where it seemed just very quick. In that he did not put a lot of thought. I think he saw an opportunity where he could actually get to Frank. And he was at a point of just pure desperation.
Mm-hmm.
He was just in a psychopathic state. There was no way of going back at that point. He just needed to end it.
He just had a hookup with a guy in the back of an SUV.
Use
a car. I mean,
okay.
That's when you know you are here.
Yeah, that's when you're just like, fuck it. I think the thing that I like the most in these two episodes is Claire, like, hands down. I think everything that she's doing is incredibly fascinating, and I think the real peak for me was when she's on camera, on, you know, at the in front of the press, talking about Frank, tearing up a little bit, and then when she, like, when it's all done, she walks off, and Leanne follows her out, and they kind of pass Doug Samper, and they're just kind of like, it was kind of like, I loved that moment. I'm like, girl, it's on, you know. It's just like, oh, I love just all this crazy manipulation and horribleness that's going on. I don't know how else to describe it.
No. I totally agree. I think that it was awesome to see this climactic moment of him actually being shot. There was so much going on, and it was just the fact that, you know, Meacham was there for him at the very end. I felt so bad. I think that was the sad thing. I felt so bad. One of my friends actually was crying over the fact that Meacham had died.
Hand. Oh man.
I know.
So losing Meacham, that hurt.
Well, let's get right into our predictions.
What about you? You didn't answer the question.
Oh, well. You know, I guess my favorite part of it was that press conference, but particularly just the walk. The way she walks off, just like she's a badass, but it's so subtle. Yeah. And you realize how tall her heels are. And she's portraying that she's just as great as a man, if not better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I really like that presence that she has. And when you just watch her be a badass and walk away, you're just like, yeah, that's clear.
Totally. So, so self-assured and confident.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that is some of the hardest things to penetrate. I mean, as, like, the outside, as even Frank or anything, when you have that kind of solid foundation, it's hard to bring those people down. Yeah. I mean, it's easy if you know they're very, very, like, they're most vulnerable areas, I guess, but it's very hard to tackle with those people.
Yeah. And I think in the absence of Frank, you'll see Claire become a little bit more like Frank, and maybe she'll understand him more when he comes out of the, you know, if
and then
he comes
divorce
out,
flies out the window, and they just love each other and ride off into the sunset.
Oh, that would be my hope.
M Gladiator says in the chat room, you guys are literally in a joyride with Claire. And it notes that I haven't seen the whole season, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Oh, you've seen the whole season?
Yeah, whoever Gladiator is has seen the whole season so far.
But we appreciate you not spoiling anything, M. Gladiator.
Yeah. I mean, heck yeah, we're in a joyride with Claire. Have you seen her?
Well, now it's
maybe Donald Blythe, too.
Yeah. Hey, watch out. Well, that'll be one of my predictions. Yeah, so let's get to predictions.
All right.
Go for it, brother.
Yeah, I'm going for it? I mean, you got my prediction at the beginning, which was really long-winded. It was kind of complex.
Oh, the backstory.
I had hoped you'd gone away from that.
we'll move on from that. But I'm hoping that Frank will get a liver. I think we can all agree that he will. It's just... Yeah. Will there be a desperate moment? I just have this weird inkling that Stamper might do something rash in order to save his boss. I'm afraid that would be really, because he is probably my favorite character beyond Frank. So
totally grabbing like a knife, cutting himself open, and just offering up the liver. That's what I teach him. No, I'm kidding. I don't think Seth is gonna last, to be honest. I think that's my one prediction, as in like the deaths coming up. I don't think Seth's gonna last. I think it's great for now because technically like they need him, but they're gonna find a way to knock him off. That's my one thing.
Will Hammerschmidt go after Seth, because Seth actually had threatened the fact that he knows things, which is
that's interesting.
He
for
could
sure.
offer it up to Hammerschmidt if he knows that he's actually doing some kind of story.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see.
I mean, I definitely saw it more of like Doug, but I mean, maybe Doug won't do it. I mean, that's an interesting prediction as well. So
I see Hammerschmidt going in with Kate, whether he actually goes back to work there at the Herald with her. But I certainly see them, you know, obviously digging a lot into Zoe. And what else? I love what we were talking about with the I don't see, you know, Blythe sticking around, and I see that him really getting overwhelmed, and obviously Claire continuing to work there, and she will make him see, not with his doing, but she will make him see that she knows everything and that he is just a puppet, and he will want to get out as fast as possible. Especially the fact that it sounds bad that he doesn't have a wife, but You know, he just wants to kind of
isn't she
be
dead?
Done.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
What is wrong with you, Michael?
Sounds bad.
No, I'm just.
It's not like divorce or anything. She's passed away.
No,
he's a widower.
I know exactly. And so I feel like he just wants to just kind of live his life.
Oh,
he doesn't
no.
want to work anymore. He just wants to.
I mean,
be
it's
done.
A distraction.
No, that's fair for sure.
Well, yeah,
but I
I'm going with the opposite prediction. When Bly says to Claire, "I trust you with my life," I see a little romance there. But I feel like it'll be fake on her part, but she's going to use that for some leverage.
Huh.
But I do, and I'm going to see, I think Blythe is going to want to stay in power because of Claire.
That's interesting. I like that too.
Yeah, Blythe isn't going anywhere. He's starting to get his foot, you know, he's starting to get a little swagger right now.
Yeah.
Frank's probably got some more time on the mend. I think you see Blythe really step up and with Claire's backing. So.
Do we see, real quick, do we see Frank coming back next episode or in two episodes or three episodes? What do you think?
It's just hard to tell how quickly they'll advance the timeline.
I think two or three. I think two or three.
I think he'll sit out.
Still got to save his life, in essence. Mm-hmm.
He might, like, come back the end of next episode, where we'll see
him
perk
I think
up
that's,
or something.
Yeah, I would say
yeah because we still need a little bit more of that development with Claire and, like, Blythe and see what's going on there.
We just ended with him in a major medical crisis. So, you know.
That's what I was going to bring up.
And the credits just come
for
up.
For those of you that don't know why that happened, is his heart rate is stopping.
Yeah.
But it's the worst because that happens and all of a sudden those credits come up so eerily and you're like, what?
That's when you reach your hands towards the screen hoping that you can do something about it, but you can't.
And it's almost, they're so smart because almost the way the credits come up makes you feel like you want more. They end. They always end it in a way that doesn't really feel like
great at the tease. Great at teasing.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there, but... We thank you, AfterBuzzers, for joining us. I'm Shaka Smith. You can find me again at Twitter, Shaka Strong, and Instagram, Shaka Strong.
Michael Klaus. You can find me on Instagram at TheOnlyMC, on Twitter at Michael Klaus TV. I'm now up to like 405 followers on Instagram.
Ooh,
we
yeah.
talked about getting to 400. I think a 406 maybe.
Wow.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Cavasudo. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Maria Cavasudo and on Snapchat at MGCVSST.
And I am Kevin Ellis. You can find me on Twitter at TheKevinEllis or on Instagram at KevinEllis25.
Cool. Download us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Tweet at us. Comment on YouTube. And we'll see you next week.
Adios.
See you guys.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.